politics is the art of the possible, and dreaming about things when they're not practical actually makes it harder to accomplish those things in the end.
There's some interesting psychology around how easily people run back into things like nationalism and xenophobia, and how hard it is and how slow it is to move towards actual equitable, like, policies and, like, social programs.
History, man, it's hard.
History. It's not history until it's history. Yeah. Man. What up, world? Welcome to Maripod. Today is September 14th, 2017, and it is approximately 6:20 p.m. Mountain Time. I'm your host today, Tyler Mayo, because Blake Mannion is out spreading love and grooviness through his jam-tastic music. I'm going to do my best to mock and be him as much as possible on this episode.
I was going to say your hello world was like pretty spot on.
That's what I was going for.
I wouldn't have known the difference had it not been looking at
you. I totally wouldn't have known the difference.
This is episode number, what are we at?
32.
Yeah, see, I'm a bad host already. 32, something like that. Or you can just look at the number that you clicked on, and then you'll know. Because we'll fix it by the time we have the link. But I'm here in Berkeley, California. We also have John Anderson in Evergreen, Colorado.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
And John Kelly in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah. Hello, listeners. Welcome back.
Hi, you guys.
Yeah, sorry. We've taken a slight hiatus because we all went on vacation.
Yeah.
And, speak for yourself, man. You know, I've been busy.
Okay, some of us went on vacation because we're a bunch of slackers. Some of us are like in school and saving the planet, but I decided to drive a F-250 all over the earth for a little while. So
I'll have to repent
for that a little bit.
I was really busy fist pumping at the Jersey Shore, so.
So we all have some redemption to do.
Hanging with the Guidos. Did you get any rum ham while you were out there? Throwing a little Always Sunny out.
I didn't get on top of that, but I did get, of course, some funnel cake.
Oh man, that's probably not very healthy.
Yeah, we had I guess they have different names, but Corona Rita, where you have the margarita with the Corona in it.
Yeah.
Anyways, enough about my vacation. Today, we're going to talk about the possibility of Trump making a deal on DACA with the Democrats. And then we're also going to talk about the new Bernie Sanders' new single-payer healthcare system, the Medicare for All proposal. And we may also get into a little more talk about just the future of the Democrats. See where the winds take us. But we're gonna start with the possible deal on DACA, and a little like framework here is this is part of something that may be an emerging trend. We'll see, but of Trump making deals with the Democrats as he recently made a deal. I believe it was a 3-month deal to raise the debt ceiling in response to the devastating hurricanes Harvey and Irma hitting parts of the southern U.S. and eastern seaboard. Well, I guess it was western coast of Florida.
It was all of Florida, let's be honest, right?
It
was like 400 miles wide.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. I mean, everywhere got affected. Yeah.
Some places got it worse, but definitely the entire
state. I mean, my boss lives in Jacksonville, and his parents' place flooded.
Totally.
And like the St. John's is bad there. So
yeah,
weather's complex. Turns out, James Inhofe, if you bring a snowball into the Senate, it still means that global warming exists.
Yeah. Again, global warming, total misnomer for everybody out there listening. Climate change,
folks.
Global warming's too easy for people to be like, oh, what? It's cold out. I'm wearing a jacket.
Yeah, but ice caps are melting. Yeah, but I'm wearing a jacket.
It's not happening right around me, so it does not matter.
So it doesn't. It doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
And yeah, and so that proposal was it was the deal that they made was that raising the ceiling on the deficit, and then also allocating within that some resources for recovery efforts there.
Yep.
So then now there's a new deal or possible deal around DACA. Any of you want to?
Yeah.
A little background on that.
So I think it's really instructive to begin with the one of the money quotes from the Democrats' statement after the meeting. They said, quote, "We agree to enshrine the protections of DACA into law quickly and to work out a package of border security excluding the wall that's acceptable to both sides." So that means that Trump, at least he said to the Democrats, "I agree to make DACA law, and if you give me money for border security, not necessarily for a wall, I'll do it," which is remarkable. Yeah. For example, Ann Coulter tweeted out after this was said, "Is there anybody now who doesn't want Donald Trump impeached?"
Wow.
Yeah, I saw that, which is it's so funny. But I agree, John, that it is pretty remarkable that he would come across the aisle. Do I think it's a long-term change or trend? Probably not. I think he'll do whatever it takes to make himself seem happy, I guess, and have support
what
when
the
stuff starts to hit the
here?
Fan. I don't know.
I mean, like, part of me thinks that he's just like, "I'm the president, I can do what I want, so I'm going to lie, get that money, and then use it to build the wall."
You know what I think he's doing? I think he's trolling the Republicans.
Maybe.
I honestly think that, like, you can explain a ton of his behavior just based on trolling behavior, and he's just mad at the Republicans right now, and he's like, "Well, how can I piss off the Republicans? Oh, I can make a deal with the Democrats."
Yeah. Yeah, it very well could be that. Or maybe it's just the fact that he thinks that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan have failed him the last few times he's tried to stick his head out into the policy realm, that he's just like, "Yeah, I'll do anything else at this point,"
right?
And try to go down that rabbit hole again.
Do you think that he knows that neither Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer have institutional power to introduce legislation, and they will have to have the Republicans in on this, at least in some piece?
I mean, no, they probably don't. Probably
right?
Not.
No, you can't. But, like, someone around him knows that.
Yeah, but they're not in on those meetings when he sits there and talks about whatever he wants to.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or, like, yeah, who knows? Maybe they can find somebody. Who knows? You know?
Well, it's got to be Paul Ryan or Mitch McConnell. They have to, because they are the ones who have to introduce the legislation, right?
Right.
Yeah, so.
Well, Paul Ryan's
they're the
easy
ones with the gavel,
so maybe he just.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe he just counts on Paul Ryan being a pushover, which is not a bad assumption to make.
No.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't necessarily call him a pushover, but what I will call him is completely ineffectual at getting anything done in terms of leadership of a chamber of Congress, because he's just been totally inept. Worse than Boehner.
Worse than Boehner, because Boehner could at least negotiate with the Democratic president.
Yeah.
It's
You know, I think a better way of saying that he's actually a collapsed pillow. Collapsed pillow. Inside joke, you guys. But look at his face. He is a collapsed pillow. I mean, like, what do we, on the surface, this doesn't seem like a terrible deal. It happens.
We would take this every fucking day of the week.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty normal, totally.
We would take this with probably a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president.
You know what this is like, everybody? Mm-hmm. This is like when in a football game, which you all should be boycotting right now because of Colin Kaepernick, but besides the point, to use the metaphor of football, this is like when it's first down and you get 4 yards on a run. take that every time. I'll take 4 yards on first down all day, because eventually you're going to keep getting first down slowly but surely. And like, sure, it's like you're not getting a first down. You didn't just get a touchdown, but you made some progress, you know?
Absolutely. Throw it in the metaphors, Blake style.
Yes, do my best.
But yeah, I mean, this definitely moves the ball forward, as we say, in the policy realm.
Right, and I mean, given the fact that the starting conversation of DACA last week, which was basically no hope that it would maintain, given the signature from Trump and saying he's going to throw it back to Congress to have them decide, and the Congress being heavily Republican, it's pretty interesting that he would turn that way. But it is a positive, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's great for the Democrat. I mean, like, I don't see how this is bad for Democrats, because either we don't get the policy we want and it sows discord in the Republicans, or we do get the policy we want and it sort of sows discord in the Republicans. Like,
yeah. Well, and I mean, besides just politicking, it helps millions of people too that are here and should completely be here legitimately. Like,
it is like, both like economically and morally completely the right policy. Like, these people, a lot of the anti-immigration talking points is like, oh, they're all drug dealers and criminals. These people, by definition, 100% of them are not, because they went through extensive background checks. Like, right, we know that these are the best immigrants we have in the country.
Yeah.
And this is low-hanging fruit. It's easy.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I also wonder, like, partly around, like, why Trump is, you know, trying to make a deal or open to making a deal, is like, is he just seeing again the rise of the resistance? Because people are just like the resistance to this, the mobilization around supporting immigrant communities, because it's affecting so many people. Like, the thing is, when something affects you personally, like, it could just be your friend or someone you know, but like, for me, I know a handful of people who could be affected by this.
Yeah,
and I don't think and I'm not unusual. And so, like, the amount of people, because this will affect so many people, then the amount of people who are willing to resist and work against this, I just got to wonder if Trump's just like, fuck, I can't do this again. Because, like, he's just kept failing, you know? He's, like, keeps trying to do things, and he just keeps failing because people are just, like, just mobilizing, like, talking to their congresspeople. Like, look at all the states and the governors who are just like, so we're just gonna, like, use our state tax dollars to, like, fund people who don't have the money to renew by that deadline, right? Because there's, you know, there's, like, and, like, he's just like, fuck, you know? Like, maybe he's, you know, which is great. I want him to be exasperated and not be able to get done what he wants to get done.
Yeah. I think that, like, his number one imperative is winning, in whatever that means in his mind. And he, I think, pretty objectively, even in his mind, is not and has not been. And so, yeah, maybe he is willing to, like, try something new. I hope that it is honest like that. I have no faith that it is.
Yeah.
but I hope that it is. He is, like, growing in the office. So we'll see. I would love to know what the conversation between Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer was about this.
Yeah, right.
But, like, yeah, I think you go for it. There. I don't see a downside to this, right? Like, I would be worried about a trap, but I just can't see how it is one.
I mean, the things that I think about in terms is not so much this issue, because if he's promising... And it's still kind of nebulous whether or not the wall's on the table or not when it comes to DACA. It sounds like it's probably not, but larger amounts of investment in border control, right? The trap then politically could be a month down the line when they actually get into the tax reform stuff that they want to do, or when Medicare and Medicaid come back on the table again, like I'm sure we're going to talk about with Bernie Sanders here in a few minutes. That's when Trump will then come back out and go, hey, look, I worked with the Democrats on DACA. Why won't they cross the line and help us out?
Yeah, but I don't know how much of an impact that is, right? Like, that's a one-day story.
When you can't rail in the Freedom Caucus of the Republican Party, and if DACA actually is successful and goes through mainly because of Democratic and some bipartisan report, I could see that having lasting impacts.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that that's a powerful enough trap. Like, if that's the thing, cool. Let's do that. Bring it on. Like,
sure.
100% of the time.
And the only also, thing I could think
so,
of. Yeah.
Trump has denied now that this is all happening. And he said, for example, he tweeted, "The wall," all caps, "which is already under construction in the form of new renovation of old and existing fences and walls, will continue to be built." So he is now coming out and saying this is all bullshit. But I mean, the Chuck Schumer, actually, I think very like within the last couple hours, there was a hot mic moment on the Senate floor with him talking to one of his colleagues, being like, "No, this everything we said was real. Like, he likes me, actually, turns out, and we're gonna like get some stuff done."
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if Chuck Schumer did that on purpose retaliation for Trump's tweets.
Yeah.
Denying it.
I mean, yeah, I think what we're seeing is just that is like Trump is going back or modifying so many things that he has claimed that he's going to do. And that like, and of course, this is not new to politicians. This is not unusual. But what is unusual is his like he's a populist candidate whose whole thing is like, "I'm not a politician and I'm gonna like do whatever I want." And you're like, "Oh, it's not working, is it?" And that's yeah. And that's great, because like then he, so basically his whole motive and his whole like structure of how he was trying to do things isn't working, and that's right. Exactly what we want. You don't
yep,
want to work.
It is. But I would also like, I am slightly concerned about this because I think it's really smart on his behalf. If right. I was him, the strategic my strategic imperative would be basically being Nixon and trying to play the congressional Democrats and congressional Republicans off each other, like Nixon played the Soviet Union off of China.
Right.
That would be my play, and I would try and operate essentially as a third party president trying to get my agenda through. And this is the first move that he's made that actually indicates that type of strategic calculus, which I think is by far the smartest one. So I'm like slightly concerned that maybe he has stumbled onto something smart, but also it's great policy for us. So let's pursue this for now, because that's why we're all involved in this. It's not so that we can win. It's so that we can help people.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I think you're right, John, the whole idea of acting as a almost third party president, that seems to be the type of move that he's making now. And that's kind of what yeah. he ran on, you know, even though yeah. he ran as a Republican, running on draining the swamp and running on being an outsider in Washington. He was clearly not really running as a Republican in the first place. Yeah. And so while I do see some concern there, and I agree that it's an interesting point, he still needs his base to support him to be successful in the long run. And yeah. by siding with the Democrats too many more times, that's just not, he's not going to keep his base, and the people in the middle are going to be like, "Now you're just all over the place, man." So
I mean, people are, he, I think, has, strategically, this is a smart move. Tactically, he totally fucked it up, because everybody is losing their minds. Steve King, you know, our favorite congressman from Iowa, said,
yeah, Steve King.
Yeah, yeah, he's the calves the size of watermelons because they're bringing over tons of marijuana or whatever.
Yeah,
he's that.
Yeah, he's
guy.
He's got a slew of stuff. If people who are listening, if you haven't heard any of Steve King's talks, go ahead, look him up sometime.
Just do yourself a favor.
Yeah, the absurdity of it's ridiculous.
He tweeted, "Quote." If AP is correct, Trump base is blown up, destroyed, irreparable, and disillusioned beyond repair.
Oh my god. Amazing.
Yeah.
I think that's an overreaction.
So Trump is very quickly running out of friends, which is very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of an overreaction. Little bit.
Yeah, it's a pretty
I wouldn't
dramatic
say that his base is destroyed.
Breitbart also ran the headline "Amnesty Dawn."
Oh my god.
Yeah. So this well, is.
It, there's crazy stuff unhappy. Going on. I mean, like, look at. Did you see the interview with Steve Bannon, CBS, over the weekend?
Not yet. I'm really excited to watch it. I'm going to watch it tonight, but I haven't gotten a chance. I've been catching up from vacation.
Yeah. He basically called for war on the Republican Party, saying,
quote, if this goes all the way down to its logical conclusion in February and March, it will be a civil war inside the Republican Party that will be every bit as vitriolic as 2013. Bannon said, referring to the stalled fight that over blah, blah, blah. And to me, doing that in the springboard of primary season for 2016 is extremely unwise. I agree with Steve Bannon. That is extremely unwise.
Well, that opens the door in some ways for the Democrats. So let's maybe shift a little bit here. And we want to talk about the future of the Dems, but we want to start by talking a little bit about Bernie's plan that he has put forward and a few others have signed on to. Anybody want to give a little background on that?
Yeah, so it's, to me, the character, the, what do you call it? It's the caricature of what Republicans think of when they talk about impractical democratic socialism. It is significantly more generous than like Canada's system. Canada doesn't include things like dental or vision. It includes dental and vision. It includes basically everything. It ends all private healthcare. It bans employee-based healthcare in a 4-year transition period, which is great. But he doesn't say how he's going to pay for it. So that to me means that this is not a serious proposal, which is disappointing. I think that there is a slight counterpoint to that, which is Democrats over and over and over again have negotiated with each other because we are actually like honest policymakers. So in 2009, what Obama should have done is just outlined his ideal package and then made Republicans negotiate. Instead, he tried to make something that everybody could agree on, and then it negotiated down.
Right.
So you could say, you could make the argument that this is what Bernie is doing. But I do think that, like, if we're going to be the party of serious policymaking, we should at least figure out how to pay for reforming 18% of our GDP if we're going to be serious.
Right. And, I mean, this is, hate to break it to any of you out there, because I could totally be a Bernie bro, but this is why I don't like Bernie Sanders, is because he's, I mean, great image is in terms of like an imagery and of like getting people going and speaking some truth in some ways, but he's not really good when the rubber meets the road. He's not really good at putting together like practical things that can actually manifest right now. Like, he's more of a, I would say he's more of like a thinker and a dreamer. He's not so much of like an actual get shit doneer. Like, I saw some, and that was a criticism of him during the primaries. And there was all these articles that came out of being like, well, actually, here's all the things he's done. But then when you put that side by side with someone like Hillary, it looks like nothing. Like, he's really not that. And you know, so to me, it's just like not surprising. And there is something to be said about the worth of just like, let's look at what is the ideal. Even if it's not feasible, like, there, you have to dream. You have to dream and put things like out there into the world and have some sort of goals to reach. I just don't think that makes a great like that person has a role in government, but I don't know if that person should be the leader.
I agree. Yeah, and that's like, that is my main frustration with this ongoing Bernie versus Hillary argument, is like, Hillary is a serious person who gets serious shit. And politics is the art of the possible, and dreaming about things when they're not practical actually makes it harder to accomplish those things in the end. And so, yeah, like Bernie, Bernie is the Democrats' Ron Paul, right? Where he holds a part of the soul of the party and gives us a direction to go. But I totally agree. He should not be the leader of this party. It is very dangerous for him, for this, like, is Bernie going to run in 2020? He cannot run in 2020. He is a, like, 77-year-old Vermont socialist from Brooklyn, and we need some newness in this party. We don't need, like, Karl Marx from Brooklyn running.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would make the argument that Sanders, while definitely touching to the soul of part of the Democratic Party, doesn't necessarily represent all progressives, even when it comes to what the future of even a progressive United States should look like. And I think that this was about political timing, and it was clearly about bringing an issue back up that had been kind of put to the wayside for the last month or so. And I hope that for the Democratic Party in general, and for success in both the midterms in 2018 and then again for a presidential run in 2020, that a single-payer healthcare system like Bernie is proposing is not a major part of the platform, because I don't think that it's viable in a national election at this point. I just simply don't.
I would say single payer is viable. Medicare for all is not viable. And actually, I think in terms of policy, like, they're actually not that different.
That's a good distinction to make, though.
We're about to see, this is all going to be about branding, and Medicare for all is going to be now branded as a Bernie socialist idea. Yeah. And single payer, I think, also allows for, like, I would like to see a very basic package of healthcare covered for every American that, like, makes sure that everybody's basic needs are met, and that actually will make the costs much more rational. But I also think that if you want to spend a gajillion dollars on healthcare and go into a private market and supplement what you already have from the government, you should be able to do that. Something that Bernie doesn't do is there's no cost sharing for among individuals. So you can go to the doctor for free whenever you want to. And there's a lot of psychological research that says if you charge people like $10 to go to the doctor, it actually will reduce usage substantially, which is really smart, because then our healthcare is going to be less expensive overall. So, yes, correct. Like, I don't, and this is why this isn't very serious. And also, I don't think it is, it's very socialistic. It is super duper, like, it has socialism drizzled all over it. And in America, I think we need a more, as they say, American solution, which is going to be more based on federalism, more diffuse, more personal freedom.
Small safety net, but also free market. It has to have a connection of the two in this country. And I mean, and for the Democrats to be successful, they have to be able to rail in people in the middle, and they have to rail in independent and moderate Democrats. Yeah. And most people simply won't go that far left.
Yeah, I totally, that is, you're saying exactly what I was thinking. And I think that, like, for maybe us who grew up in Colorado, you know, and like, I have family in the Midwest and spent a good amount of time there. Living now for the majority of my adult life in, like, coastal liberal urban hubs, I think it's easy for some coastal liberals to, like, lose touch with the fact that, like, fucking the majority of America is never going to vote for a socialist in our lifetimes. It's not like an open, someone like this, obviously, of socialists and this kind of obvious social policies. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, I don't know if you know those types of people, but I know them, and they are the majority of the country. And, like,
it was almost equally as mind blowing to me that a socialist could come as close to the Democratic nomination as the Trump phenomenon.
Yeah, it's like populist for Republicans. Yeah,
it was mind blowing to me that that could happen.
And people would say, like, "Oh, the fact that he's that close shows you, like, but see, but there's a difference between people who are active in primaries and campaigning and then people who vote."
And also, if the Republican propaganda machine that made sending emails on a personal email server look like sexual, the equivalent of sexual assault, imagine what that machine turned on to Bernie would have done. And they never did. Yeah. And so the counterfactual of Bernie would have won is bullshit. Totally, because we don't know what would have happened without Hillary out of the picture, and it would have been a disaster.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And also it's a serious conversation that the heart of the Democratic Party needs to have. There needs to be kind of a reality check for some parts of the party where it's like, well, whether or not you believe in what I think is a fact that Bernie still would have lost, you have to be able to come back to the table and work with the other people in the Democratic Party if you don't want Donald Trump and Trumps to be elected for the next 20 years.
Totally. I think this is an indication, this Medicare for All proposal is an indication of something that's been really concerning me, which is we are overlearning the lessons of 2016. If there were a gajillion things that conspired for Trump to win, including like Russian trolls buying tons of Facebook ads, as we just saw, and Hillary won by 3 million votes.
Yeah.
Still. And so
if you believe the false narrative about illegal voting.
And so I think if we say, oh, well, we have to like run super far to the left, just like Republicans did with Trump or something, like, I think that's a serious mistake, a serious long-term mistake. The demographics are on our side. The policy is on our side. I think that, yeah, of course we need to make some changes because we lost substantially. But those things I think are learning how to deliver a message that is significantly more coherent, and then spending a significantly less amount of our time on the presidency and much more of our time on state legislators and school boards and rec districts and the small type of government that we should be way better at anyways as Democrats, will in the end accrue so many more benefits on the federal level. And we will, as the Republicans have shown, done a great job. But that doesn't mean that we should, you know, become a bunch of Marxists. It means that we just need to fine tune, I think.
But you have to also like leave a good taste in people's mouths. Like the thing is, like, you have to like breadcrumb people into making moving to the left, you know? This is maybe too expansive, but there's some interesting psychology around how easily people run back into things like nationalism and xenophobia, and how hard it is and how slow it is to move towards actual equitable like policies and like social programs. And like one way, like just look like, for example, at Colorado Care, which was in the last election. They basically tried to make a single payer in Colorado. It lost. 79% voted no. 79.
I voted against it.
Yeah, well, because they rushed into it, it would have made it so that you couldn't have any coverage for abortion, because there's a standing law in Colorado that says that no state money will go to abortion, so it wouldn't have overdone that. The money was like just not like they hadn't really gone into like how the taxes were going to work enough. Like there was just, and that's the problem, is that like with this coming out. And what the Dems are just doing in general is like they're just throwing shit at the wall, and you're like, that's not the move. Like, you do slow incremental things, then people will see that it worked, or they'll see benefit in their life, and they'll be like, hey, that wasn't so bad. And then you go, hey, you know, wouldn't also be so bad? And then you give them another little breadcrumb, and like that is how you make actual.
And I think that needs to be combined with a very serious, broad, principled vision. The thing that Donald Trump did way better than Hillary Clinton was make America great again versus whatever Hillary Clinton's slogan was that none of us can remember.
I'm because with
it
her.
Wasn't like, yeah, because it wasn't it wasn't a coherent message, right? And so I think that we should be saying, like, we are for every American having great health care and affordable health care. And you can run that over and over and over and over again. And that conveys to people, we're going to go out and fight for you. And then when they're like, well, how do you do that? Then you can boil down into the policy. Yeah. So I think we need to have it needs to be coherent top to bottom in that. And Trump did a really good job with the message part and did a terrible job with the policy part. Hillary did a great job with the policy part, did a bad job with the messaging part. And we as Democrats going into 18 and 20 need to combine them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. But I just want to go back and touch briefly on what Tyler said, because I think he makes a really good general point about the trends of history within this country, the whole leaving breadcrumbs and the slow movement of progress towards the left. or towards what we might call cultural inclusion and equality and equity. Because you do see generations where there's far pushes and then there's always beat back from the conservative side of the country. And that's what happened in the beginning of the 20th century, what happened in the 1960s with the Cultural Revolution. And we haven't really had another big push yet, but we're on the point where it's almost there. And we're moving.
Could you argue that Obama's presidency and then Trump's election is a major progress and then the pushback?
I'm not sure I can argue that. I think it's still too close to look at it at a real good historical lens in terms of what it's going to actually do 30, 40 years down the road in terms of the outcomes. Take the Cultural Revolution of the 60s and the passing of the Civil Rights Act and the voting laws, and that was a huge push. And I mean, that's substantive policy. That would be like Obamacare might be that.
Yeah.
Right? If it continues to be a federal policy and a federal law over the next 20 years. Maybe we can discuss it as a huge push, but it really does depend on what happens in the next 10 to 15 years in terms of progressive policies, especially in the healthcare area. Interesting question, John. Hard to tell.
Yeah.
But
I think I see it socially in some ways. Like you can make some parallels, you know, between the Cultural Revolution, the Civil Rights Movement, and our current Civil Rights Movement, right? Mm-hmm.
Especially if you throw in like LGBTQ issues,
right. Like especially like transgender, like equality, like and you know, like the bathroom bill that Obama, you know, passed on, you know, that the executive order that Obama made. I agree with Kelly that it's just too close to tell. Like there are also like glaring like mistakes or not. There are glaring omissions, like. There wasn't a significant overhaul of the federal government's position towards police departments, right? And accountability towards police departments. There are things that are just like, oh, but it's, again, I think it's just too close to really say.
Yeah. History, man, it's hard.
History. It's not history until it's history.
Yeah. And you know, 0 to 10 years is not a good enough time to really look back in retrospect. I would say now is about the time to maybe start thinking about what some of the long-term effects of 9/11 might have, like historically.
Yeah.
Like you're like 15 years out, you know, 16 years out. You can start talking about historical context of it. But that's my methodological historian coming out in the history theory coming out. So I don't need to bore people with that.
We're getting heavy. Well, that might be a good place to call it quits for today.
I think so.
Let's wait 15 years.
We have no idea. Thanks for listening. I'm glad you made it this far.
Anybody who knows us well knows that that's a good stopping point for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been the norm for years.
Stay tuned. I'll just say at the end, people will be interested to see this. By the time you'll be listening to this, there may already be, I'm sure there'll be some sort of coverage on it. But Ben Shapiro, who personally, and I know there's something just personal about it, but he fucking grinds my gears probably more than many of the like right wing fascist pundits. Something about him, I just. You find him so punchable. He's speaking at UC Berkeley today in about an hour. So
that should be fun.
Yeah, and then the week after next, there's a quote-unquote free speech week, which Milo Fuckface Anopoulos has been organizing. And it's like there's like 20 speakers, him and Coulter and fucking Steve Bannon.
Yeah, I was going to say Bannon just got invited. Yeah.
Yeah, he said he's going to speak. So that will also be a shit show. So look out for that.
Wow.
Yeah, that could be a big one with all of them there on the campus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we certainly live in interesting times.
Don't we?
Exhausting.
Listeners, right, as much as I said go and listen to Steve King stuff for Ridiculous, don't go and listen to Ann Coulter. She's horrible. Don't support her at all. Don't even give her the time of day. She should just be ignored into oblivion.
I completely agree. She is just soul sucking.
Yeah. Also, I saw, so I didn't really look into it so much, but like one of Tommy Loren's ancestors may have immigrated illegally. Really amazing. Just really amazing. Anyways. well, thank you for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next time.
Godspeed, everybody.